Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to today's Sherritt International Corporation second quarter 2017 results release conference call and webcast. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference today, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Thursday, July 27, 2017, at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Flora Wood, Director, Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Everybody who's joined in the call this morning, I'll remind everyone that we do have forward-looking statements which you can forward-looking statements apply to comments we make in our remarks and then also later on in the Q&A. With me today in the room, I have David Pathy, CEO, Andrew Snowden, CFO, and Steve Wood, COO, and I will turn over to David.
Okay, well, thank you, Flora. Good morning, everyone. I know from the calendar there's quite a number of companies out with earnings last night and this morning, so I know it's a busy day, so thank you, everyone, for taking the time to join us this morning. We're going to do what we normally do here. I'm going to touch on a few highlights and talk a little bit about nickel and cobalt, and then we'll have Steve talk give you a bit of an update on operations, and Andrew talk about finance a little bit before we come back and take your questions. Starting into the slides then, on page three, there's a few of the highlights from the quarter. We ended the quarter with cash balance still strong. It was at $274 million, including a little debt repayment again in the quarter. Q2 is traditionally a heavy cash quarter for us based on the timing of interest payments on our debentures and the timing typically of cash in the seasonality and fertilizer receipts. Andrew will talk a little bit more about that. We also had some reductions in our capex. Our oil capex is off by about $20 million. That reflects the savings that we're able to realize in our drilling costs in Block 10 that we talked about last quarter. We've also deferred some seismic we're going to shoot in one of our other newer blocks in Cuba late this year into next year. There is potential for some further capital reduction, and I'll touch on that a bit towards the end. Over on the slide four, just a quick summary on our battery restructuring transaction that we announced during the second quarter. This is the solution to our 40 for 12 issue that we've had in our battery capital structure that we've been dealing with really since financial completion in October of 2015. The basic deal is still there, and that we will see ourselves go from a 40% equity interest in the project to a 12% interest. In exchange for that, we'll essentially remove the $1.4 billion in non-recourse debt that is effectively linked to 70% of our 40% interest in the project. We continue to work through that with our partners. We're on the verge, we hope, of finalizing definitive documentation and still on track for a closing, hopefully by the end of Q3, if not Q3, the into Q4, turning largely on the timing of getting the senior lender consent. In the interim, you'll see that Embatavi still continues to flow through all of our financial statements at a 40% rate, even though our interest is effectively now 12% given where those partner loans are. And we'll look to see that better reflected, the economic reality of that reflected in our financial statements once we get this deal closed. Moving on then to nickel and cobalt markets, slide six really tells two different stories based on what we're seeing in nickel and cobalt so far this year. Nickel's had a tough first 6 months. You can see it's off 10% or so far in 2017 after a bit of a rally in late last year. Certainly pressures on availability of ore out of Indonesia and the Philippines is weighing on prices at the moment. But we have seen a little bit of an uptick in a rally in the last few days. We are still actually quite confident that we will in time see more of a bifurcation in the nickel market as we come to understand and the market comes to understand the difference in different types of nickel. We produce class one LME grade nickel at both of our operations, and that is goes towards not just stainless steel, but also eligible for battery demand, which is really what's driving the cobalt price. On nickel demand, we have seen stainless remain relatively flat, and that availability of ore out of Indonesia and the Philippines for nickel pig iron, while potentially growing in size, is really only available for stainless consumption, and that is what's weighing on the price. However, if you look at class one nickel and primary nickel, we've seen really that's where the growth in demand is really coming from, and on the back of an expected growth for battery production. And we've been in deficit for primary nickel for the last few quarters, and I'll touch on that a bit more as we look at inventories in a moment. Cobalt, on the other hand, is continuing and accelerating the great run it got on in the second half of last year. We saw cobalt prices run significantly in the second half of 2016, and that progress has continued in the first 6 months of 2017. Cobalt now is trading in the $27-$28 a pound, up from lows of $9 or $10 in the middle of last year. We started the year with an estimate internally in our cost forecasting of $14. We've upped that to $24, and that's partly what's behind our reductions in our cost guidance this year. But even if the spot prices, even that's now looking a bit conservative side. Over the page, you do see the charts showing global nickel inventories in the last few years. We have talked about LME inventories in the past that maxed out last year at around 425,000 tons. They came off to around 375,380, but they've been kind of stubbornly more or less at that level for the last few months. Looking at nickel inventories in total, however, we are seeing more of a decline. We've gone below 500,000 tons in terms of global nickel inventory for the first time in a couple of years. And from their peak, global nickel inventories are off about 15% so far. As I mentioned, there's data from CRU says that for the last probably 6 quarters now, there's been a deficit between production and consumption of primary nickel. And I think that's what's starting into eating into that inventory, and we expect to see that trend continue as the consumption and ramp up that we're expecting to see in battery and other more sophisticated applications of nickel beyond stainless steel, for which only primary nickel can be used, and the Indonesian and Philippine ores don't contribute to that supply. Cobalt has been quite the story lately. Slide 8 just shows you a few of the headlines there and what's the attention that cobalt is drawing. Driving it is this focus on electric vehicles, and the trend on that is, and forecasts over the rate of adoption for the next 10 years vary quite widely, but they all see much more aggressive adoption of and usage of electric vehicles in over the next 10 years. In the last few months, we've seen automotive manufacturers make greater commitments to battery and electric vehicles. Volkswagen talking about all electric and hybrid vehicles by 2019. Similarly, we've seen countries mandating the use of electric vehicles, or at least looking to eliminate the use of internal combustion engines. France, China has a big push on this. The UK, just in the last few days, looking to eliminate internal combustion engines in new vehicles by 2040. And as a result of that, we are seeing battery manufacturers looking to focus on security of supply for cobalt. Cobalt's contribution to us is obviously significant, particularly at MOA, where we have a very strong cobalt to nickel ratio. We produce about 8 or 9 pounds of nickel for each pound of cobalt, making it one of the higher cobalt producing relative operations in the world. Which is most relevant to us because it's MOA is the of our two nickel operations where we actually see the immediate cash benefit. Despite that 8 or 9 to 1 nickel to cobalt ratio, you can see on the chart here that 30-odd percent of our revenue in MOA came from cobalt, 45% came from nickel. Just to give you a sense of the exposure we have to nickel and cobalt, every $5 change in the cobalt price is worth about $26 to us, and that's our 50% share at MOA. A dollar change in the nickel price is worth about $45-46 million to us at MOA. Lastly, from me on page 10 there, you see the nickel industry cost curve that we typically look at each quarter. Just a couple comments on that from me. This quarter, we've tried to highlight the operations on that curve that do have the benefit of some cobalt credit. You can see they are largely congregated down the lower end of the cost curve. Because of that increase in the cobalt credit that we and other producers are seeing, we did see the 25th percentile in the cost curve come down quite a bit. Well, not quite a bit, but at least down a little bit. Conversely, the net direct cash costs at the 50th percentile stayed relatively flat in the quarter, I think really reflecting that, you know, absent in byproduct credits, there's not really much more ability for the industry to lower costs beyond where we are today. The other point I just make on this, and we've been making this point for a while, is that you see the spot or year-to-date price there cut through the graph, and it still shows that 35% of the industry is underwater on a cash margin basis. While that has persisted for quite some time, we continue to believe that that is not sustainable over the long term, and you are starting to hear a bit more talk in the industry again now, particularly having been through a period of particularly low nickel prices again the first half of this year, about whether there's going to be some supply-side response to that in response to low nickel prices. That's what I wanted to highlight for you this morning. We will come back, as I say, and take your questions at the end, but now I'm going to ask Steve to just touch on a few operational highlights for you before we go to Andrew.
Okay. Thanks, Dave, and good morning to everyone. As usual, I'd like to begin by commenting on our safety and sustainability efforts. We continue to work hard in the area of safety to ensure that all people at our sites go home safe and healthy every day. And we're seeing good results coming from those efforts. For example, the Fort Saskatchewan, that is, oil and gas, and the Embattleby operations have been lost time injury free thus far in 2017, with combined numbers of over 15 million hours since the last LTIs. MOA, on the other hand, has not had the same success, and we continue to work with our partners there on this subject. On sustainability, I'd like to point out that Sherritt's annual sustainability report was released June 13th and can be viewed at sustainability.sherritt.com. It outlines the company's sustainability approach and our performance. On to slide 12 now. MOA's nickel production was lower than expected, with our sales being about 100 tons less than production. Cobalt production held up better, although lower than that of Q1 this year. Dave talked about the positioning of our operations on the cost curve, and I'm very pleased to see that MOA's costs are competitive with nickel sulfide mines. I would like to take a moment to talk about fertilizer as well, as it's very unusual for a fertilizer to be a net cost in the NDCC breakdown rather than a credit. I remind you that the other line item aggregates fertilizer credits and marketing costs and discounts, as well as other byproducts like sulfuric acid. This year we have lower fertilizer margins as we're squeezed at both the price end with continuing price pressure and the cost side because of our planned shutdowns. Embattleby production year to date of 18,150 tons means the operation has to produce 23,350 tons in the second half to get to the midpoint of our most recent guidance, which is within the range of previous rates, by the way, as recently as Q4 of last year. The impacts to production in the second quarter stemmed from limited acid availability following the molten sulfur tank failure in February that we reported on previously, and subsequent issues at the acid plants, along with some lower recoveries in PAL due to lower CCD thickener availabilities. I'll spend some time on the guidance slide to outline what has happened at Embattleby in the first half and what's been addressed, and I'll outline what's still ahead of us there. As you can see from the charts, NDCC is an improving story for both MOA and Embattleby, and Andrew will speak more to the NDCC guidance later on. On the energy slide, slide 13, we had another good quarter for Cuban oil production, and power production is similar to its levels of last year. We saw a slight increase in oil unit operating costs with a natural decline in production rates. Power's unit operating costs continued to fluctuate, mainly with the scheduling of major inspections. The oil average reference price, Gulf Fuel Oil 6, continues to hold at around 88% to 90% of WTI pricing, a much more comfortable place to be than what we were in the first half of last year, where it was more like 66%. Our next milestone in oil is the drilling of the second Block 10 well, which is expected to start in August. This well will target the lower Balaz using the first 3,300 meters of the previously drilled well. We're just waiting for importation permission for certain materials and supplies that are required for the drilling of this second well, which includes the lost circulation materials required in dealing with the massive lost circulation we encountered in the first well. With this material, we will be prepared to implement methods that have been successful in Western Canada in dealing with similar situations. We expect to be in a position to announce results in the fourth quarter of this year. My last slide, slide 14, reiterates our guidance for the rest of the year. As you know, we're reducing production guidance at both Moa and Embatabie. We're also reducing or narrowing the NDCC ranges and the expected CAPEX. Andrew will speak to the NDCC and CAPEX, and I have a few points to make on the production guidance revisions. Starting with Moa, I think this one is fairly straightforward. A 1,500-ton revision, mainly due to the decision not to add some third-party feeds, and to recognize, to a lesser degree, the lower production at the Moa mine. Dave talked earlier about what might be the leading indicators for changing market demand for nickel, and one is the third-party feed market. There is clearly a tightness developing in the third-party feed market, as third-party feed sellers are able to improve their economics. The reduction at Embatabie is more significant, and it takes us back to production levels closer to those of last year. While the results for the first half are quite disappointing, much of the loss was associated with the deteriorated condition of the sulfuric acid plant. Embatabie has taken over full operation and maintenance of these plants and has put in place mitigation that now have the plants running at full capacity with full acid storage tanks. By operating at or near design rates for long periods of time, Sherritt has demonstrated that the flow sheet not only works as designed, but can work well in Madagascar. There are no fatal flaws. It is various equipment failures that have prevented sustained operation at design rates, and Embatabie is well advanced in implementing a world-class asset management program to address this for the life of the operation. Many of the failures are the result of legacy design and materials of construction choices, and these are being addressed in a prioritized manner. For example, the major electrical issues that plagued the operation in previous years has been all but eliminated, with no total blackout event experienced since October of 2016. In the PAL area, 19 rubber-lined tanks have been reskinned with alloys, with seven more planned to end 2018. And by the end of 2017, Embatabie will have replaced 10 to 12 major risk rubber-lined pipe runs with alloys. Aside from production, Embatabie has established a very stable, safe, and cost-effective business that is poised to deliver strongly on its profitability potential as the effects of the asset management program kicks in and the nickel price improves over the coming periods. For example, Embatabie has achieved world-class safety performance with only one lost time injury in the last 22 months and is delivering second quartile NDCC despite operating at 60% of design capacity this year to date. To achieve our revised production guidance for the year, Embatabie will need to deliver the second half at rates similar to those achieved in Q4 of last year. We also point out that this forecast anticipates a stronger Q4 than Q3 as we have some maintenance shutdowns scheduled in September. With regards to oil, gas, and power business, there are no changes to production guidance. With that, I'll hand it over to Andrew, who will talk about NDCC and CapEx revisions next.
Okay. Thank you, Steve, and good morning, everyone. I just have a couple of slides to talk to this morning, starting on slide 16, which provides a bit more detail on our net direct cash costs for the quarter at both of our nickel operations. As Steve has already mentioned, despite the lower production in the quarter, we did post very competitive NDCC numbers at both of our nickel operations, particularly at Moa, which came in within the lowest quartile, which was a great achievement. And as you can see at the bottom of the slide here, really one of the key drivers behind the NDCC numbers for the quarter was the strong byproduct credits we received on the cobalt side. But compared to Q1, in the second quarter, we saw realized prices for cobalt of approximately $25 a pound, which compared to around $19 a pound in the first quarter. And so that really helped us improve our NDCC number. As Dave has already referenced, that cobalt price and the strength we've seen in the cobalt price year to date has allowed us to revise our NDCC guidance for the year, and we've lowered our guidance there at both the Moa and the Battery operations, which reflects an increase in our assumption from $14 a pound, which is where we sat at the beginning of the year from our forecast perspective, to around $24 a pound within our latest forecast, and there's still, of course, room for further upside there. The reason why our NDCC forecast is not even lower than we are disclosing is because it does also reflect the lower production guidance that we've adjusted for the year as well. So both the lower production and an improved cobalt price have been reflected there. Looking at our mining, processing, refining costs, and this slide there provides a breakdown of the cost profile at both Moa and Bataby. There's very little change when you look at that from a high level. And so just a couple of things I'll just point out. Within Moa, the costs that were attributed to maintenance slightly increased in the second quarter compared to the first quarter, as you can see from that slide, and that was primarily driven by the annual shutdown at the refinery and fertilizer operations within our Fort Saskatchewan location. Secondly, at Moa, and this is something that isn't clearly evident from the slide, but we do continue to benefit from the third acid plant at Moa. And to put that benefit in perspective, in the second quarter, our total sulfur and sulfuric acid purchases were around 66 cents a pound, and that compared to $1.29 a pound in the equivalent period last year. So in excess of a 60 cent per pound saving, and we achieved that same saving in the first quarter, and we'll expect that to continue going forward. As in Bataby, the one cost item there, which obviously dominates our overall mining and processing costs, you can see it continues to be maintenance. That portion there is still high compared to where we expect it will lead to, and we feel over time that will trend towards levels similar to the Moa mine site, and that will be as a result of the focus on asset reliability that Steve spent some time talking about earlier on. Turning now to slide 17, we have the usual cash waterfall there, which shows the changes in cash from December of around $310 million to the balance at June, which is approximately $275 million. The main drivers for that change, you can clearly see from this slide, we have $30 million of interest paid on the debentures, and then approximately $27 million paid down on our revolving credit facility, which really declined our cash balance over that period. But those decreases, though, have been offset by a couple of items. So one, as you can see in the first column there, we generated around $32 million of positive cash flow, which primarily came from the performance of our energy operations. And also you'll see that we received $8.6 million from advances, and that related to advances that we provided to the Moa joint venture. And that's a good news story from my perspective, in that despite a $4 a pound nickel price environment that we saw for much of the quarter, we're able to generate sufficient cash flows at the Moa joint venture to pay down some amounts owed to Sherritt, and that really reflects a strong operating cost performance that we're able to achieve over at Moa during the quarter. The final point on this slide, just to mention briefly, is the capital expenditure, which is around $11 million for the year to date. The capital expenditure will increase during the second half of the year, as has already been mentioned, and that primarily relates to the drilling on the second well at Block 10. Overall, we did reduce our capital guidance by around $20 million for the year, and that is, as Dave's already mentioned, relates to the lower cost of drilling the second well, as well as deferring the seismic on Block 8A. So that concludes my remarks this morning, and now I'll turn it back over to Dave.
All right. Thanks, Andrew, Steve. Just before we take your questions, I wanted to just give you a sense of kind of what to look for from us in the second half of this year. We should see our Mbatovi transaction finally come to fruition and get closed, hopefully in time to see that reflected in the third quarter financial statements, but if not, in time for year-end. We should see the continued benefit of these significantly improved cobalt prices flow through our results and cash flow from the Moa joint venture. We will have our Block 10 drilling results for you before the end of the year that will give us a better sense of where we're going next year in terms of Block 10 development. I also touched on the possibility of further capital reductions in the oil and gas business. We are at this point in time in conversations with our Cuban partners down there in CUPET, the state-owned oil company, about extensions to our existing production sharing contracts that are due to expire at the end of this year and next year. And at this point, we're anticipating that we'll be able to get that done before the first of those contracts expires in November. And the greatest immediate advantage of that would be, in addition to being enable us to sustain some level of production as we look to bring Block 10 online and potentially other blocks that we're talking about, would be a potentially further reduction in capital as a result of money that we currently have earmarked for acquisition of new equipment that would otherwise be due to revert back to the Cubans at the expiry of those contracts. So we'll have more for you on that fall as well. Lastly, before I open it up to the operator to take your questions, I do, a number of you are aware of this already, but I wanted to highlight that Flora Wood is our head of IR is leaving us at the end of this week after a little over 2 years here, I believe. I just want to thank Flora for her contributions to Sheraton and the difference and help she's been to us and our ability to communicate with you and tell our story. She will be greatly be missed, but she's been a great help to us, seeing us through the quarter end here. Going forward, Joe Racanelli, who is, I believe, known to some of you already, will be joining us in a couple weeks' time to help us through the next little while here, and then we'll be on to see how we handle this longer term after that. But on behalf of everybody here, I want to express my thanks and gratitude to Flora and wish her the best of luck in her new pursuits, and we're going to miss her here. Operator, with that, we'll take any questions anyone may have.
Thank you. To the audience, if you have a question or comment today, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. For those of you joining us today using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, to the audience, please press star then one if you have a question or comment today. We'll pause for just a moment. We'll go first to Kevin Cohen of Imperial Capital.
Good morning, and thanks for taking the questions, and certainly appreciate the granular color in the prepared comments. I guess from a couple different perspectives, I wanted to touch on Mbatovi as it relates to the exit, and just wondering, the transaction fees and other closing costs still to be finalized, is there any sort of thought if that'll be kind of similar to the U.S. $30 million and the first bullet point underestimated costs, and will the total outflows occur by the end of 2017, or does some of those occur in 2018?
Yeah, I mean, there will be transaction costs in terms of banker and lawyer fees, consent fees to the senior lenders. There's going to be some stamp duty payable in Madagascar on the equity transfers that's still being sorted out. That will be some number of millions of dollars all in, I would think. And if we do, depending on when we close, I would expect most of that will be incurred and spent before the end of the year.
That's helpful. And then looking at the organic sort of cost performance at the Moa JV, there's certainly a bit of noise in the quarter, but just kind of thinking excluding cobalt credits and sort of directionally where that goes, how do you guys kind of think about that over the next kind of 2 to 4 quarters, maybe where that starts to settle out when you look at it more organically, just the mining, processing, and refining costs, et cetera?
I mean, the byproduct credits always introduce some noise into the net direct cash cost. Both fertilizer does move our at MOA around seasonally somewhat, and fertilizer prices have been low. Obviously, we are getting the benefit of stronger cobalt pricing here. But, you know, the last time we had net direct cash costs at the level they're at today was in 2008 when we had the benefit of a $45 a pound cobalt byproduct credit. So there has been progress made on the cost side beyond just riding the back of higher byproduct credits. You see that in our acid plant that we completed last year and other efforts that we've had both in the mine in MOA and the refinery in Fort Saskatchewan to lower costs and be more efficient. And that, I believe, is sustainable going forward here for the next few years. We see pretty consistent grades coming out of MOA. I think the cost of achievements that we've been able to make beyond commodity price noise in the last couple of years are meaningful and sustainable.
And then just one last question, kind of thinking about Block 10, assuming that there is a successful outcome on that front, I guess how do you kind of think, big picture zooming out, about sort of the potential total CapEx budget and how the company might approach that over the next kind of 1 to 2 to 3 years, whatever that time frame might be?
I think we'll have more clarity for you on that after we see what the results look like out of this next well. In addition to the potential extensions, we are looking at another opportunity in Cuba that could also be in a development position by next year. And so I'm hoping we'll have more of that over the course of this fall. They have the potential, I think, to absorb a lot of capital if we want them to. In terms of the capacity of these fields to be a, support a significant sized oil business for quite a long time. What we've said in the past is that, you know, we have the a pretty high degree of flexibility to flex the capital spending at a rate at which our balance sheet can absorb, and it also is linked to the timing of receipts on Cuban receivables. But as we get a greater clarity and ideally some success on this second attempt to pierce the reservoir in drilling in Block 10 with some results coming out of that later this year, I think we'll be in a position then to give you more insight as to how aggressive a drilling campaign might be next year on Block 10 and the other areas in Cuba.
That's very helpful. Thanks for the commentary and continued best of luck.
Thanks a lot.
Up next from Scotiabank, we'll go to Orest Wowkodaw. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just a quick question. With the closing of the Envatome transaction potentially moving or at least extending to the end of the year, and the result of that being you're going to carry that at 40% until it closes, does that mean that will there be another catch-up in terms of at 40% your funding requirements to call it to the end of this year? And do you have an estimate of what that could be in terms of will there be any add-on to what's already been proposed in addition to the escrow?
No, the short answer to that is no, Oris. I mean, we haven't funded at a 40% rate since we achieved financial completion in October 2015. And for all the noise in terms of production levels at Embatovi, Embatovi every quarter from Sherritt's perspective has been no cash in, no cash out. So from a cash position, it's all neutral. The deal in under 40 for 12 does see us playing catch up on all the funding that has gone into the project, but at a 12% rate from October 2015, not a 40% rate. And I think the numbers you see in the presentation today in terms of the split between catch up numbers into Embatovi and amounts going to escrow vary a little bit. The sum of the two is the same, but there's been a bit more into Embatovi catch up and a little bit less into escrow on the basis that there was a small cash call in June to help fund the interest payment given Embatovi's production in the first 6 months. It didn't have the cash to make that. In terms of whether that changes any more between now and closing, at this point, my expectation would be that it doesn't. Obviously, Embatovi has another cash call to make in December, but with prices where they are now, assuming we can hit some reasonable level of production, and Batavia should be able to be, generate sufficient cash to be able to make its interest payment. Any further cash calls that are made by Batavia between now and closing would just go to, we would be, would see a further reallocation of the amounts from the escrow to amounts that go straight to Batavia to fund it, not at the 40% rate, but at the 12% rate.
Perfect. Okay, so you're locked in effectively at 12, no matter kind of what happens here in the second half. And then just in regards to the asset operating performance, clearly it continues to struggle. Can you give us any idea on what we can anticipate from a operational or production perspective for next year? I mean, clearly this asset's yet to reach its full potential, but is there, do you think it's possible that, you know, it could never get there at this point?
We, for all of the various issues we've had down there in the last couple of years, Orest, there's still nothing there that leads us to believe that this can't get to 100% or north of 100% in terms of its throughput capacity. I mean, we've had quarters or extended periods of time down there where it's done that. And we've been able to put together a good quarter. Our challenge is we haven't been able to string together a few good quarters. And that's what all this asset reliability focus that Steve elaborated on a little bit has been focused on. I know it's not shining through in the production results on a quarterly basis yet, but Steve was trying to give you a flavor that we do feel like we are making progress down there. And when is the end of this is, I'm afraid, a bit of a how long is a piece of string type of question, but we do remain confident that there is an end to this and that this asset's capable of producing with the throughput at the rates it was designed to do. And I think the cost numbers that it's put up today, even with relatively poor production, demonstrate that it can be a viable and profitable asset as well.
Okay, maybe just as a follow-on, in terms of, should we think of 2018 as kind of another catch-up year to, you know, fix some of the engineering issues and design issues? Or, you know, I guess I'm trying to get a sense of how far away do you think you are from reaching that potential?
Yeah, I mean, to give you a sense, I think we'll be looking for Batavia. I don't have a number for you today, but Batavia will be, I would expect full year guidance for Batavia in 2018 will be higher than what guidance was for Batavia before the reduction for 2017. But I would guess it's not going to be full capacity.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We'll hear next from Greg Barnes of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
I guess returning to Batavia again, on the acid plant, I think from your comments you suggested that maybe it was being run by a third party and you have now assumed operatorship. Is that right?
Yes, the acid plant was being run by a contractor who is no longer on site.
So the implication is they were not running it well or not maintaining it as well as they should have been. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would agree with that, Greg, and I'm only hesitant because I'm not sure what I'm allowed to tell you here. But yeah, it's fair to say that we were not satisfied with the performance of the contractor in the way the acid plant was being run, and as a result, they are no longer running it.
Okay. And secondly, then on the countercurrent decantation, you said it didn't. It was lower in the quarter availability. I know you've had problems there before. What were the issues this quarter, and have you fixed them?
I'm going to ask Steve to just touch on that. It wasn't as significant in terms of the chemistry that we had in past go rounds on the, you know, those seven big CCD tanks that you've seen down there, Greg. But do you want to just touch on what the issue was, Steve?
Yeah. The main issue we had there was a drive motor and coupling that weren't working, and we had to put it down and shut down one of the CCD thickeners to allow us to do the repairs. Which means that the remaining thickeners, of course, because we have fewer of them, are less effective as a total than when you have all of them.
So that,
does that answer your question?
Yeah, is that resolved then?
That one's been resolved.
It was a mechanical failure then that's been resolved rather than a chemistry process issue like we were having 18 months ago or so.
I guess the question that Auris had just now is looking into 2018, are there any potential areas of the plant where you do see issues, or are you getting to a point now where you feel you've got most of this nailed down? I know, Steve, you addressed that somewhat in your comments, but, you know, I think you've got the acid plant nailed down. The CCD sounds like it's better. Where is the next flashpoint for you, Steve?
So another area that we're focused on is dealing with corrosion issues because we are near the ocean, and because it is a sulfur-based plant, if you will, you're going to have a lot of corrosion. And we've undertaken an asset integrity program and we've already identified where those critical items are, and over the next year and a half or so, addressing those. And then putting in a program where we will be on an annual basis inspecting for corrosion and replacing and repairing as needed. So there'll always be some corrosion work going forward. But we're playing a bit of catch up on that for this next, for the near term.
That's not corrosion within the process. That's corrosion of the actual infrastructure itself due to the location of the plant next to the sea.
For the most part, yeah.
Just to put that in context, though, Greg, I mean, in terms of what Mbatha-Vi means to us today, for all the issues, Mbatha-Vi's been no cash in, no cash out from a sheriff's perspective for 2 years. We'll close our deal here sometime before the end of the year and put up the money to catch up on the 12 and the escrow. With reasonable levels of production and commodity prices around where they are now, Mbatha-Vi should be able to be at least cash flow neutral between now and 2019. And so we would expect Mbatha-Vi will continue to be no cash in, no cash out for the next couple of years. To the extent there is some small requirements, the escrow should be more than sufficient to cover it. And where the rubber will hit the road a bit more is in 2019, when the deferral period on the amortization schedule expires, and the project once again has principal repayment obligations on the project financing down there, where even if it's running reasonably well, we'll need nickel prices a bit north of where they are today for the project to be able to generate sufficient cash flow. But from our perspective, and what we've liked about what we are achieving with this transaction, in addition to getting that $1.4 billion off our balance sheet and reducing the debt down to less than $1 billion, is that certainty that the in terms of cash demands on Sherritt's balance sheet are minimized.
Right. So you've got about a 18-month window towards 2019 before you really have to worry about it too much, basically is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. Thank you.
And once again to the audience, that is star, then one, if you have a question or comment today. We'll pause for just a moment. And it appears there are no further questions at this time. I would like to turn the conference back over to Ms. Flora Wood for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Dave, for your remarks. I'm going to miss you guys. And to everybody who joined the call, I hope to talk to you in my new gig. And Joe will be happy to be speaking to you when he starts in August. Thanks.
And ladies and gentlemen, again, that does conclude today's conference, and we thank you all for joining.